All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor with
Sean McCool, and we're going to have a special guest joining us here in just a minute, Jonathan.
What are we going to be talking about?
Well, I'm a little concerned, to be honest, about this episode, because we're going to be mixing alcohol and math.
And that never turns out too well, you know.
Yeah, so we got, you know, alcohol, math, and then doing both of those things in public. So it's, I don't know. Fortunately, I think our guest will keep us on track.
There you go.
Because I don't know that either one of us will. We're not, at least I'm not a math guy. I don't know about you.
No, math is a weakness with me even before alcohol. So I can only imagine what a fine craft beer will do to me, especially at 11%, which I'm having.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to be right in the same range. So I guess we'll jump into that. Because, yeah, we'll just save that. We'll just use that as the tease.
There you go.
That's it.
Math and marketing.
And math beer. And marketing.
And alcohol.
Sounds like another name for a podcast, math and marketing.
There you go. So, all right. So before he comes in studio, we're going to go ahead and jump into our beverages because we're not sure. I don't think he's going to have a beverage. He may have a beverage, but it won't be a strong beverage with us. So we need to show him how it's done.
Okay, let's do it. What do you got on your side?
Well, I've got a returning. It's an old favorite of mine, but I actually got this as a it was actually like a, can you imagine getting a Father's Day present, a 4-pack on Father's Day last week? So that was one of my oldest boy was very thoughtful. Of course he couldn't buy it. He's not old enough to buy it. So he had my wife pick it up, but it is a 4-pack of one of my favorites, Dragon Milk. Yeah. So, one of my favorites, along with the Dragon Fire. Did you ever find that at Total Wine?
Yeah, I couldn't find it here. They didn't have it.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah. I'm missing out, man. May have to order it because I think they can order it from store to store. So may have to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
this is good. It's not as good as Dragon, the Dragon Fire, but it's a close second.
So what's the same brewer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just what's the difference?
A little more spice in the Dragon Fire. Yeah, and I think it's a little higher. I want to say it's a little higher than 11%. I think it may be 12 or 13 maybe. So,
okay. Cool.
But yeah, it's, and it's a, what do they call it? I think it's a, oh man. There is a little spice to it, but it's kind of a, it'll come to me in a second. So Jamaican stout. I was trying to think. Jamaican.
I had a Mexican chocolate stout on here one time. That was really good. I almost picked that up today because it was pretty good. Unusual, but good. But instead, really good. I went with brewer is Untitled Art.
Good.
And they do that because they do artwork on their literally art inside and outside the can. So this one is an espresso honey imperial milk stout.
So sounds good.
No idea. We'll see.
We've had Untitled Art, but not that one. We haven't had that.
I've had another Untitled Art. They got an end cap right now, so they keep getting my business, I guess. but this one is 10.9%.
Okay.
And the artist on this is Stephanie Heyman. So
do they get
a little beehive looking motif?
Because because of the honey, I get it. That's cool.
Yeah, and the dark colors for the stout and the espresso, I guess.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So if you go on your site, they actually feature all the artists on their site too. So that's kind of
cool.
Nice little twofer there, I guess.
Yeah.
So I already poured mine because I wanted to let it sit a little while.
Me too.
So
good stuff.
So cheers.
Cheers.
Mm. Wow, that's different.
Oh, okay.
Like in a
How so?
That's very that interesting.
Good, different.
Yeah. I'm trying to process it a little bit. Yeah, you definitely get a little, definitely get the espresso, definitely get a little bit of the honey, but not too much. It tastes like something very familiar, and I can't place what would have coffee and honey in it that would be similar. I don't know.
Coffee and honey.
It's got a familiar taste. I just cannot place, like, it tastes like something I've had before, maybe a dessert of some kind. I don't know. Yeah, it's good. It's good. I like it. It's one of those, again, though, it's because it's an imperial stout, it's a sipping beer. It's not a,
it's pretty heavy.
Three beers. Yeah. It's not a two or three beer kind of beer.
Same with this. Same with this. But this one gets I don't know what I've rated this in the past, but this one gets a, I don't know if we were doing ratings back the last time I had this one, but this one gets a solid, this time around, 4.7. I'm going to give it a 4.7.
Okay. All right. I am going to give, let's see. I'm going to give this a 4.5. It's still a little rich, but I'll give it a 4.5. Good flavor. Not too strong, just about right. And it's just going to drive me crazy what that flavor is.
Somebody it's posted weird. A comment. Bit o' honey.
Maybe that's what it is. That's going way back though. Wow, I haven't had one of those teeth puller outers in a while.
I remember those. Was that like the square candy?
Yeah, I mean it's like. You know, last week we were talking about Jolly Ranchers with David Dutton.
Yeah.
You know, those things will take your teeth out. And then,
oh man.
Yeah. I remember the bit of honey. Maybe that is what it tastes like.
Did you ever have to wear braces? Remember that when they would tell you don't ever touch a Jolly Rancher or any of that crap when you're
I never wore braces. So never had that problem.
Those things will kill your braces. Oh,
they pull your fillings out for sure.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, looks like somebody appeared in our studio just through the power of telekinesis or teleportation or something. I don't know. Tell us something
there, Robert. Why don't you tell us something while you're in the green room? All right. So we got to bring up Robert Barrows.
He's dressed up too.
I tell you, he is dressed up for occasion. I feel kind of slumish today.
I know.
All right. We're going to pull.
We look like this every week, but
you know, I bet he's in meetings. Cause he does all sorts of stuff and outside of advertising. So who knows? He's probably on some,
doing a deal
executive meeting today, maybe doing a political action campaign meeting.
Let's bring, are you going to do the bio and bring him on?
Yeah. I got it pulled up here. So our guest today, before I bring him up out of the green room, is Robert Barrows, the president of RM Barrows Advertising Public Relations. Back in the day, he sold advertising time on KCBS FM San Francisco back in the 70s. Born in Brooklyn, New York, graduated from Northwestern University, went to Hollywood. This is interesting. His first job out of college was as a production assistant on the Steve Allen Show back in 1971. Pretty cool.
Wow.
Then he did some work for CBS. So quite the background in advertising. So we are pleased to have Robert join us on the show today. And talk a little bit about his stuff. We're going to be talking about specifically math and marketing. Kind of a cool book that he's got called The Barrows Popularity Factor, where he uses an easy mathematical equation to quantify the relationship between advertising and sales. And so I'm excited. I'm really intrigued about that today. So, Robert.
All right, everybody listening, give Robert a big round of applause. Give him for being on the show today. There we go.
That round of applause makes me think of the baseball games during COVID when they would hit a run and you'd hear the entire fans cheering and nobody was there.
That's right.
And I remember watching one game where they made a bad call and you could hear all the fans boo and there was nobody in the stands. It was hysterical.
So, yeah, we started that trend.
Yeah.
Was that they were toying with something like that in Major League Baseball with some of that was fake. It was generated, but some of it, they were toying with an app for fans that were watching at home where they could literally, scream or yell at home. And I thought that would be awkward, wouldn't it? People sitting on their couch watching a baseball game and like screaming into their phone.
That's wild.
Bang Theory, which is probably one of the most popular sitcoms ever on television, I have a very difficult time watching it because they have a laugh track, and the laugh track laughs at everything, even if it's not that funny, and it's just laugh and laugh and laugh. And I can never watch a whole episode of it, and yet it's probably one of the successes of all time.
Yeah,
I think that's what made it so funny is that there was no, it's just. A lot of it was just done with camera, You didn't need a laugh track for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of the new comedy doesn't have a laugh track. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how the times have changed.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an idea where the mask came from. Many years ago, working with a client, and they were doing a telephone tarot card reading program on one of those 976 numbers many years ago. And we had no idea that anybody would call. Or how many people would call or who would be successful or, what's the best way to send the advertising on that. So we did a television commercial and we ran a test campaign just for 1 week, maybe about $1,500 worth of daytime television on a local station. And the client made a profit on that of $1,200. And she said, well, what would happen if I spent $15,000? And I said, oh, that's easy. And I explained, here's how much audience we bought in terms of gross impressions. Here's how many calls we got. And here's the ratio of that. Basically, sales, what you're doing is you're taking the relationship between advertising and sales down to its lowest possible common denominator, which is how much did you sell in units, not in dollars. How much did you sell in units over how much did you advertise in gross impressions? And what you get is a rate of return on gross impressions. And we started using that math as we rolled out to different stations and different markets. And it was incredible because our budget went from $1,500 the first month to $3,000 the second month to $5,000 the third month to $15,000 to $50,000 then to $100,000 a month within 6 months because the math, basically, it's universal and effective, and it allows you to basically quantify the relationship between your advertising and sales. And the reason I call it the popularity factor is because it also measures the popularity of your product and its promotion. You can have a good product with great promotion. You can have a great product with good promotion. You can have a good product with fair promotion and a good or a bad sales staff during the time of a promotion. You can have stiff competition. You can have competition on price. And you cannot really quantify all of those intangibles in the marketplace. The only thing you can really quantify is how much did you sell and how much did you advertise. And as we worked with that client over many months and years, interestingly enough, the ratio of people calling would pretty much stay the same market to market to market. And we found out some very interesting things, like when we would advertise. We advertise mostly in daytime television, and we thought, well, maybe, if we advertise in some soap operas, maybe that audience might be more inclined to call the tarot card reading to find out their fortune. Maybe if we advertise in prime time, it might work better. And we found out that, no, for whatever psychological reason or psychographic reason or demographic reason, the daytime television works best in the mass. Basically said that, and the math can, you can work with any product, any advertising campaign, test it, analyze it. You can test your past advertising and your past copy. It'll give you cold, hard numbers that are directly related to your advertising and sales, and that's why it works so well.
So let me ask you, Robert, you have an agency, right? And you do this for people. You go in and you help them figure out the math. Seems like something we should all be doing, but how many people are actually out there spending money on advertising and measuring it mathematically?
Everybody's got a different way to measure the effectiveness of their advertising. If you go into a you know, an advertising meeting at some big company, chances are you're going to have 15 different people with 15 different opinions on what worked best and how to best spend their money, as well as on the ad agency side. And what the math I developed allows you to do is take all the subjective opinions out of it and quantify it and basically do it mathematically. You can test product characteristics, you can test price, you can test copy. So basically that's the answer to it in terms of how many people are using this math. It's interesting, when I came up with this math, before I did anything with it, I went to a couple of business libraries and I started looking for books that would basically have figured something like this out beforehand, figuring that somebody must have figured this out before me. And I looked through, I didn't read them all, but I looked through several business books and advertising and marketing books and several different business libraries.
Robert, I'm going to stop you right there. I don't know. I think there's something on your end, the audio. Can you adjust? Because we're getting some feedback. You sound like you're actually on an AM radio station. And I don't know, maybe you can adjust your microphone on the StreamYard setting.
How do I do that? I'm basically on, we can possibly do it by phone if the audio is not good.
Let's see. Do you see, there should be a setting down at the bottom, cam microphone, that maybe you can adjust your, do you see that? And then there's an audio.
There's an audio and then there's an echo cancellation. Let's see if that box is checked.
Echo cancellation is checked.
Okay. There we go. Okay.
It's automatically.
Now I do. Let's see.
Is it okay now?
Still getting a little feedback there. Let's see, audio. Let me see if I can walk you through this.
I think his speaker is picking up us, so that's where the echo is. So.
In the meantime, we'll be giving some technical lessons on StreamYard and also audio and podcasting.
On real life. Follow-up. This is real life. This is real life.
These platforms are fantastic, and I love using StreamYard for podcasting. But I got to tell you, nothing in life or in audio is simple.
No.
You have to be an audio expert. Man, we were just getting to the good stuff, too. Let's see.
You interrupt him. It's your fault.
I know. I thought I'm just trying to improve. I should have kept my big mouth shut.
I was going to call us. I don't know how that works on StreamYard.
We can make this work.
We got commenters.
Hey, are you on? Yeah. Here's what I can do. Just stay on the phone, and I'm going to Bluetooth on my soundboard. Forgot about this.
All right. So this is why you want a soundboard, people. So Jonathan in his studio has a soundboard, and it's a Bluetooth soundboard. That's how we get the noises too, the clink and the applause and things like that. So he's going to hook his iPhone up to the soundboard via Bluetooth technology, and it should stream Mr.
There?
Barrows right in.
Yeah, he's using an old phone too. Hold on a second.
Theoretically. Let's see. Yeah, that's a classic.
All right. Let's see.
I kind of miss those though. Cause you know, like, it's like the perfect ear place, mouthpiece placement. Like, you just don't have that anymore in phones.
All right. You should be on with us, Robert. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Can you hear that, Sean?
I can.
All right. It's like we're gone back in time. You're like, it's like I'm watching an episode of Mad Men, you know, with the phone and then
well, the echo's gone. So you got your wish, Jonathan. The echo is gone.
That's right.
Yes, the echo is gone.
Perfect. All right. So I forgot where we left off. We were talking about, you know, testing using this formula. Do you remember, Sean? Because we were getting into the good stuff. Or Robert?
Yeah, we talked about how Robert can go into pretty much any business and he can, regardless of what the 15 people sitting there are measuring, he can apply his formula across all of them. So Robert, maybe you can give us some examples of some campaigns that you've done and, you know, with some clients and just kind of how you brought a consensus on the math.
Well, actually, you don't have to do much of a consensus because it basically,
It's correct by definition because it reduces the relationship between advertising and sales to its lowest possible common denominator, and which is basically how much did you sell over how much did you advertise. But the key is this: don't do it in dollars, do it in units for gross impressions. And I can give you an idea.
Yeah.
And gross impressions is the number of ads by the audience per ad. So for newspapers, use circulation figures, don't use readership figures, and things like that. But basically, a company might be saying, okay, well, what if we raise the price from $1 a unit to $2 a unit? Let's see how much that affects our sales. Or what if we raise our price to $3 a unit? And the math will let you do that also, because what happens is the first part of the math will give you a rate of return on gross impressions. Okay, that's my battle's popularity factor, in 10 words or less. It's a rate of return on gross impressions. And once you establish what the rate of return is, which you can do from a simple math with a calculator, you don't need 10 spreadsheets doing this, and you don't need 50 researchers working 10 days at a time on this. You can basically do all the math with a simple calculator. You say, okay, here's my rate of return. Here's the gross impressions that I'm going to be buying on this next campaign, whether it's in television or radio or magazines or billboards or skywriting or on the internet as well. And you say, okay, here's my rate of return. Multiply it by the gross impressions, and you get your estimated sales in units. Then you can take a look at your estimated net profit per unit, and multiply it by that, and you get your first net revenue. Mm-hmm. And then you subtract your ad cost, and then you get your first net profit, and then you take a look at your return on advertising. And it's just that simple. You can say, okay, well, we ran a test campaign in Chicago. Now we're going to roll it out to Los Angeles and New York and Miami and see if it holds true there. And what I found with the math is that when you're working with mass numbers and mass audiences, the percentages hold up pretty much by themselves. Now, the math itself will vary, and there are several variables that will vary at the same time, and some of those variables that will vary are the rate of return, the price, the popularity, and that kind of stuff, the size of the audience, the cost of the audience, the revenue per unit, and all of those things will vary at the same time, and they'll either increase or decrease over time. But my math lets you track that, and it's very easy to use, and you don't need calculus to do it. So any company, whether they're large or small, whether they're spending just a little bit on advertising or whether they're spending a tremendous amount of money on advertising, can use this math. I can read my whole booklet in about an hour, and the math is so easy to use that it can be done by one person in moments with just a simple calculator. And what it'll do is it'll give you very objective answers as to which advertising, in which copy, and which cost efficiencies are producing the best results for you. And you can use it to help you increase your sales, increase your profit, and decrease your risk. Because what it can do is it'll give you more of the information you need to fine-tune key elements of your marketing with far less risk. It's just that simple.
Sure.
And any business can use it, and the math is universal and effective. By the way, I use the words universal and effective just in case anybody from the Nobel Prize Committee on Economics is is watching, because I was curious after I developed the math. I was curious. Some people won a Nobel Prize were saying that some aspects of business were almost like just playing cards. And I figured if they could win a, Nobel Prize in economics for that, perhaps I can win, a Nobel Prize for the math I developed. So I did what any good, person would do, contact the Nobel Prize Committee. So I sent them an email, and I said, what do you have to do to win a note to win a Nobel Prize? And they said, well, you've either got to be a chaired professor in Sweden, or you have to be recommended by a former Nobel Prize winner. So I, went to Google and asked, who's a former Nobel Prize winner? And I came up, I believe it was Milton Friedman, and he was at Stanford at the time. Mm-hmm. So I sent him a letter in my book, and I gave him my pitch. And he sent me a letter back and scribbled in the margins, not even a separate letter, scribbled in the margins were, your math may be very good for business, but as far as the Nobel Prize is concerned, don't hold your breath.
That's awesome. Hey, at least you get a response. That's right. 100% response rate.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Robert, I got a question for you. Since you're still active with all the media, different types of media, TV, radio, newspaper, internet, are you still working in all those mediums with a lot of your clients?
Yes.
So I'm curious, like, because we don't have a lot of people on that have depth in kind of the older, you know, a lot of people think that stuff doesn't work anymore. The radio, TV, newspapers, blah, blah, blah. I'm curious what you're seeing as far as price and scalability and price on these quote, you know, kind of outdated networks like TV and radio and billboards and newspapers compared to the internet.
Let me put it into a different perspective. First, I'll tell you an anecdote about newspapers. Excuse me. And whenever people say newspapers are dead, I say, wait until they write something bad about you. You'll think everybody in the world saw that article. And the next reality, in terms of media, is that there are basically three types of media. There's targeted media, and whether you get that by, an email or a mailing list that you can, you know, buy, or addressable ads on TV, or, you know, click-throughs after, you know, cookies and, you know, retargeting type of thing. So there's targeted media. And on top of that, excuse me, Chad, persuasion by the finest, time for a glass of water. So on top of the targeted media, there's targeted mass media, and I'll describe that in a second. And then there's general mass media. Let's say you're selling something that applies to people who do surfing or scuba diving or something like that. You can buy a list, whether it's email or whether it's computer or whether it's a mailing list, of people who go scuba diving. That's targeted media. Now, on top of that, there's targeted mass media. There may be several magazines that are targeted to people who do scuba diving, adventure travel, and that's your targeted mass media. But between your targeted media and your targeted mass media, you may not really be reaching enough people to really run a substantial business and make a substantial amount of money. You may be able to do some very profitable marketing to targeted media and using targeted people and to targeted mass media, but you may need general mass media on top of that to really reach a much bigger percentage of audience to basically drive home big sales and big profit. When I was working with the company that was doing the telephone tarot card reading, we could buy advertising in horoscope magazines, and there were maybe only about four or five horoscope magazines on the market. And then we thought, well, women were the key callers of those programs, so we could target to women's magazines, Cosmopolitan, Self, things like that, Women's World. But on top of that, since we couldn't buy enough audience to really make real big money, we would add television on top of that. So no matter what you're marketing now, and whether you're using old traditional media, and don't think that doesn't work. Well, when you look at people paying, you know, $5 million for an ad in the Super Bowl, don't tell me television doesn't work anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
And the same thing with magazines and newspapers. Ads in magazines cost a lot of money, and they obviously work, and they're still, you know, printing them. But when you do your advertising planning, and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, how much should I spend in the targeted media, and how much should I spend in the targeted mass media, and how much should I spend in the mass media? The math I use lets you calculate all that and lets you come up with the best percentage. It's really, it's just that simple. It's really just that simple.
That's good. Are you seeing any trends right now, one way or the other? Is it just all you just kind of look at the math and just go where the math is working the best?
It depends on each and every client and each and every budget and each and every thing that they're trying to sell. If you got a client with $10,000 budget, you go one way. If you got a client with a $100,000 budget, there are, you know, other ways to consider things. And really you custom tailor it, but the math itself is universal. So you don't have to custom tailor the math. You just test it and measure it, because it will go up and down over time, and you'll have competition over time too. So once your competition comes into the market, your popularity may go down. That's why I call it the popularity factor. So you adjust your math accordingly, and you adjust your copy accordingly. Perhaps you make your copy more aggressive. How much more aggressive should you make it? Well, you can test it with the copy I developed. You can say, okay, let's run this ad and campaign in Chicago. Let's run this ad campaign in New York, and let's see where we do better. And then you take that copy, and you take that media which works better, and then you expand on it.
I would say that this would be beneficial, too, for, you know, helping you possibly adjust your prices, too, you know, giving you feedback, like maybe your maybe your margins need to be a little bit higher, you know, if it's a new product launch. And
well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can test that. And one of the things that was interesting is that with that tarot card thing, when we expanded into different magazines, we went into Cosmopolitan, then we went into Self, and then we went into, I believe it was Woman's World. And we would use the same ad, and we would take the same, math over a period of time. And we found, I'm not going to give you some absolutely specific numbers here. The advertisement, the advertisement in Cosmopolitan magazine came in at a Barrow's popularity factor of 0.00474. That's the exact number that it came in at. Okay? They had a circulation of 5 million at the time. We got about 2,370 calls. In this case, the estimated revenue was $12 a call. They switched from a recorded tarot card reading to a live psychic reading. And because they could only answer a limited number of telephone calls, because they only had a number of, because they had a limited number of psychics, on staff to answer those telephone calls, we really couldn't do television advertising because they'd get too many calls. So we kept it to print. And the ad cost $11,210. They made a profit of $17,238 on that. The return on advertising, 153%. Mm. When we advertised it in a couple of different publications, we went into, we tested the rate of return on those publications, and we found out that one of the publications worked at about 75%, as well as Cosmopolitan. Another publication worked about 50%, as well as Cosmopolitan. And another publication worked at about 25%, as well as Cosmopolitan. When we did the math, we could say, okay, publication B would deliver, if those same numbers would deliver about a 90% return on advertising. Publication C would only deliver about a 27% return on advertising. And publication D wouldn't make any money at all. You'd lose money. So we could take those rates of return from different publications, and a company can take this from different media as well, and just do the math and say, well, based on this, here's the rate of return we got from medium A. If we only got 50% of return from medium B, here's how much money we would make or not make. So let's take a look at, to make the most money, let's take a look at medium A to see if similar programs work. Now, if you took the example of the Super Bowl, you'd say, well, gee, I don't know if I should spend $5 million in the Super Bowl. Is it really worth it? What you could do earlier in the season is say, okay, let's spend some money in some local weekly football game, mm-hmm. in a local market, see what the rate of return is. then if you really, then if you get a good rate of return, you can say, okay, if you've got enough money, either buy a few more markets on a spot basis, or you could say, well, let's just see if we can buy a Sunday, you know, game on the network and see what our rate of return is there. And then if you're getting a good rate of return there, you can say, okay, now I'm confident enough that the $5 million for the 32nd spot in the Super Bowl is going to be worth it.
Wow.
Now, on the flip side, you might say, gee, is $5 million for a 32nd spot worth it or not? How much money can I buy throughout the year on sports-related television or in other day parts or time periods or in other stations or on other networks? Will I make more money if I spend my $5 million, you know, across a series of different programming possibilities? And this math I developed allows you to test it and track it and take the subjectivity out of it. Because one guy will say, well, I think the Super Bowl is worth it. It's worth it just for the value of being there. And the other guy is going to say, yeah, but we might make more money in terms of real sales and profit if we advertise it this way. Well, the guy's going to say, yeah, but I'm the boss. And he's going to say, yeah, but you hired me to do this. And before the guy gets fired, they can sit down and say, well, let's test it and see. Let's test it and see and track it. And that's what my math does.
You know, the problem with that, Robert, is that everybody watches the Super Bowl for the commercials. Right?
Well, yeah, and I put it this way. If you're going to put an ad in the Super Bowl,
yeah,
you have to make sure that the that the message is strong enough to pass what I call the flush test.
Mm-hmm.
And the flush test is that you can hear the ad while you're in the bathroom.
Mm. That's great.
That's true. The flush test. I like that. So Robert, let me ask you this.
Interesting. Now there's one other interesting thing. In the early days of the pandemic, a lot of advertisers switched to very somber advertising. Of course, people are dying. It's dangerous. But the somber advertising sell. And I would put out press releases along these lines, and I would say, well, you know, let's take a look. The somber advertising sell. Here's the math I developed. Companies can use this math and determine if their regular advertising works better or their somber advertising works better. And I can basically tell you that about 3 or 4 weeks after the pandemic started, you didn't see those somber ads anymore. People went back to their regular advertising because their own math, mm-hmm. you know, whether they were using my math or their own math.
Sure.
You could see the results weren't giving them the sales that they needed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Robert, I have a question for you. How do you do all of your ads that you, when you work with people, do they have to have a call to action to make the work, the, like your tarot, they called into a specific number. Do you have to have that type of trackable thing in the advertising to make your math work, or does your math work despite that? Like even if it's a more general ad.
The better you can track your advertising, the more effective and efficient your data is going to be. But you don't really have to track it. In other words, I worked with a car dealership, and it was a very interesting thing. Most car dealerships spend about 1% of their sales in advertising. This dealer would spend about 3% of his sales in advertising because over many years of experience, he knew that when he spent at a much higher level, he got a lot more people coming into his store. And he could pass on what they call in the car business a skinny deal. So he would get a lot more people into his store, and he could make a lot more money and a lot more profit that way. There's one other thing in the car business. If I'm a car dealer in San Jose, my competition at other car dealerships and the factory isn't going to be very happy if I start advertising in, you know, in San Francisco and Berkeley and things like that. So you would stay out of those newspapers, but when you're buying television or radio, you can reach, you know, hundreds of miles away from your main location without angering the people at the factory or other competitors when you've got a franchise agreement like that. So he would find that he would generate, that he would get a lot of, but about 30% of his business would actually come from outside of his local designated market. Now, when we were doing car advertising, if we're going to advertise payments, it's better to advertise payments on television because they can't see the fine print that easily. You've got to make the print large enough to see according to, you know, DMV laws. But those pretty much get passed over by the consumer. So if you advertise payments, you can hide all the details downstairs, whereas in a print ad, you know, it's the guy can say, oh, that's how much I got to put down to get in on this lease deal at $199 a month. I got to put $3,000 down. I ain't going to go for that. So we would track his advertising, and we wound up finally spending about half in print and half in television for that particular dealership. Other dealers, it would be different. But we would keep track of the numbers and math, and I was always very aware of the advertising we were buying. And when I would buy the television schedules, I would just buy a ton of frequency and late fringe and daytime and weekend because we needed to reach as many people as we could possibly reach. Had we, you know, bought a lot of prime time, it wouldn't have given us the frequency that we needed to make that work. So basically, any advertiser in any, you know, selling anything in any market on any planet in the universe can use this math because it's universal and effective. It's just because you take the relationship between advertising and sales down to its lowest common denominator. In English, you know, in a sentence, that would be how much did you sell in units or how much did you advertise. In a retail store, in addition to tracking unit sales of a particular item, whether it's, you know, jeans or dresses or shoes, can also do it as customer transactions. There are two things going on here also because you've also got heavy users of certain products. Since it's, you know, persuasion by the pint, one guy might drink one beer a week, one guy might drink 20 beers a week. Those are called heavy users, and in some cases you target your advertising to heavy users, but how do you know who the heavy users are? So what my math does is it allows you to factor in all of the intangibles that you could never isolate, and it gives you the popularity of your product and its promotion, i.e. the relationship between that. You can quantify the relationship between your advertising and sales.
Makes sense.
Interesting. Can you, I mean, I'm assuming you can apply this formula for, you know, modern types. I mean, we talked about print and media, you know, print and radio and TV, but I mean, you could do the same for social media. I mean, you're talking about Facebook ad campaigns and, you know, all these social media type platforms today that you might be considering running ads on. I mean, you could
absolutely, because they do it all. They do it they do it all by impressions. Mm-hmm. That's how they measure it.
Yeah.
And you would measure your targeted advertising, your retargeting by impressions as well.
Sure.
And the one place, the one place the math isn't really effective is political advertising, because the only way to measure the effectiveness of that is on election day, and by then it's sure. too late.
Yeah.
But you can use, but a politician running for office can use it to determine the best way to spend their fundraising money. And they can see if they're, you know, which copy got brought in the most money and which media brought in the most money mm-hmm. for their fundraising. They can, you would do votes per gross impressions, but by then the election's over, or maybe it's not, in Mr. Trump's case, who knows? He thinks the election's still going on.
So you can keep spending money, right? Raising money, actually,
right.
Raising
and,
money.
And he's able to keep raising money, which amazes me.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's fascinating. So I noticed, you know, one part of your business is, you know, raising money or helping political candidates. I mean, to me, that sounds like, I mean, I know a lot of money is spent on the, you know, in politics and on the political side of things, but, you know, TV advertising, where's the majority of money? I'm just curious, where's the majority of money spent when it comes to political advertising and marketing? Is it TV?
Oh gosh, it's almost all television and let's just say direct response fundraising, whether that direct response is by mail or mm-hmm. by email. It's really almost all television.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is I love to follow the math of the negative advertising versus the positive advertising. And, you know, go negative, go early is the mantra. And I actually, not so much, my work isn't so much in working with politicians to do that, but I ran for office many years ago. I ran for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And a long time ago, I wrote a friend of mine was out of work and she needed a job and the mayor's race in San Francisco was wide open. And so I said, why don't you run for office? Why don't you run for mayor? And she laughed, and then she checked out what it involved to run for mayor. And all you had to do was put up about 1% of the salary of the mayor and, you know, get a certain number of signatures, and she ran for office. A couple of years later, I, you know, kept thinking about it, and I wrote a poem called Run for Office. It starts off, out of work, need a job, run for office. Big debts, lots of sex, run for office. And it goes on in that vein. A few years later, I teamed up with a musician, and we co-wrote a song version of Run for Office, which was a little, the lyrics were even more biting than the poem version of it. And when you start thinking about those words and writing words like that, in 2006, I filed to run for Congress. So I ran in the Democratic primaries here in the 12th District in California, and I lost. And then I ran again in 2008, and I lost again. You didn't have to do much to run for Congress. Again, it was just you put up a fee of 1% of the salary of the congressperson, which at that time was about $140,000. So you put up $1,400, and then you got 40 signatures, and you're running for Congress. It was interesting because when you're running for Congress, all of a sudden you got to think in the public good and act in the public good, and you got to become a mensch. So that's what running for office can do for you. No matter how much money I would have spent, I wouldn't have beaten the incumbent because the first incumbent I ran against was in Congress for like 24 years, and the next incumbent, he died a couple of years later. And the next incumbent I ran again, she had been in local office about 25 years, so I didn't have a prayer of beating any of them.
Sure.
But another fellow who was in our district who ran against one of the people before, what he did is he basically moved to another district where it might be easier to win, and he eventually won.
Wow.
That's the math. That's the math you need.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. He did some risk analysis right there, right? I mean,
yes. Yeah, he knew he would never beat such and such, but if he moved so and so, that person was a little bit vulnerable.
Yeah,
because of some of his the issues, and so he ran against him and he won.
So you said something interesting earlier, and we'll kind of wind things down. You said negativity. Be negative and I think you said negativity and early. So we hear we hear politicians say we need to get rid of all the negative advertising and blah, blah, blah. And we need to be, you know, but at the end of the day, no one really adheres to that. Right. I mean, it's the more negative you are, the more effective, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah.
And you see that throughout, you'll see a couple of, in about the first week or two of a campaign, you'll hear the positive side of hope and dreams and things like that. Then it goes negative, and then about a week or 10 days before the election, it switches to positive again. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was a politician who was running for governor several years ago, Meg Whitman. Mm-hmm. Meg Whitman was and is a powerful business person. I believe she was the head of, I think it was either Hewlett-Packard or something.
HP, yeah, Hewlett-Packard, yeah.
Yeah, and her campaign was the most negative campaign I'd ever seen against her opponents that you could imagine.
Yeah.
And it was so vicious and so violent against these, so not violent, but just nasty against those opponents that it really turned me and I'm sure many other voters off against even considering voting for Meg Whitman because her campaign was so terrible.
Sure.
And you see that, you know, it's just interesting to keep in the back of your mind, especially when election time comes around locally and nationally, how negative those campaigns are. And I didn't come up with Go Negative, Go Early. That's, you know, somebody else came up with that. But that's pretty much what you see. And when you you listen to a guy like James Carville and some other people sure. who did political campaigns, and that's in the back of their head, and that's what some of my poem Run for Office reflects. Which race is open? I'm ready to go. Toss in my hat, and here comes the dough. Let it flow.
Yeah.
What do I stand for? Hey, I'm your man. I'll tell you, you know, what do you do? I'll tell you when I get in office. So that's in the background. That's our politics.
Well, you know, Carville said he had the line, he had the famous line with Clinton, it's the economy, stupid, which, I mean, absolutely. Who can forget that one?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd love to handle the advertising for some campaign if any politician call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of money there, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Robert, we're about to right at an hour here, so we need to wrap up. Get ready for our next show, but we really appreciate having you on. How can people learn more about you and your agency, and how you can help them with their math and advertising?
Well, very simply, the name of my agency is R.M. Barrows Advertising and Public Relations. You can see me on the web at www.barrows.com. And you can pick up the phone and give me a call at 650-344-4445 to see more about the math. The math is called the Barrows Popularity Factor. You can go to my website or Google it, and you can download it for $4.95. If anybody wants to buy the hard copy, which nobody in the world wants to buy the hard copy anymore, that's available for $29.95 plus shipping and handling plus sales tax in California. But basically, you can read the whole booklet in about an hour. The math is extremely easy to use. It's the best $4.95 you will ever spend on advertising. And
absolutely. Well, thank you, Robert. We'll post a link to your website, especially the link to the your booklet, the Barrows Popularity Factor. You pick up some good, I mean, just on this interview, we pulled some really good takeaways from that book. So thank you so much for coming on, and take care. Have a great weekend. Okay. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
That was interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting. He's got a lot of experience and a lot of different media. I mean, you could probably learn a lot from hiring that guy and seeing, you know, because there's a lot of experience there that, you know, we're losing some of that in today's internet marketing world.
I feel like we are. I feel like everything's, you know, we're so prone to, you know, digital advertising and everything. I think there's still some lessons we can come from a guy that's, you know, got what, 40, 50 years in print and media and TV media advertising. I mean, he's seen a lot of stuff.
It's not like this stuff is gone. We just ignore it.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but there's still hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars being spent on TV ads, mm-hmm. you know, and some people might say, well, that's just big brands advertising, but it's not. I mean, you know, it's like some of the magazine ads we've shown on here, direct mail, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of wisdom there that you could, especially if you're a younger person who can really figure out how to translate what he's doing and what he did into the new medium. Yep. 'Cause that's all it is. Principles never change. The math doesn't really change. What changes is just the media. Mm-hmm. So if you can figure out how to apply some proven principles from these quote old media and apply it to, especially now that the prices are getting so similar, mm-hmm. it's not like Facebook or YouTube or any of those are cheap mediums anymore. They're not. Right. In fact, I'd bet the TV is now cheaper than, you know, and you can
local advertising
these days with the cable. And with cable providers, you can get really targeted.
Oh yeah.
If you go to somebody like Spectrum or somebody like that, they can get creepy targeted on you.
And just even like with some of these streaming services now, you know, they offer advertising opportunities. So, you know, it's really just a kind of a new world of advertising. It's not like the old days, but in a lot of ways you can take a lot of the, from my standpoint, you know, just like he said, you know, instead of going big, you know, obviously most listeners aren't even considering Super Bowl advertising, but I think it's a great idea to break it down. Look at if you're interested in running on something like a sports media platform, you know, Super Bowl, football, whatever, you know, NFL is probably one of the most popular events that people watch during football season on a weekly basis. From a local standpoint, nowhere near as expensive to get on that local channel.
Well, they always have, like, your local channels in any given set of ads usually have one local ad spot.
Absolutely.
That they have that's not a national spot.
Sure.
And until you get in that world and start asking questions, you don't realize what's available. Mm-hmm. So, like, you got to get in there and ask, like, you know, people like dismiss like car dealers and these heat and air guys that are always on TV and they got the cheesy local ads. Yeah. But some of these guys, I mean, these guys are making real money. These HVAC guys and these plumbing guys and these lawn care guys that are willing to advertise on local TV. A lot of these guys are making $250,000 a year take home. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And nobody knows about, they're not selling their courses online. They don't need to.
No,
they've got 30, trucks on the street making $130 an hour.
That's right.
You know, talk about passive income. Yeah. I mean, these guys are closer than a lot of the quote internet marketers are.
Absolutely.
So
and they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't work. Right. I mean, they wouldn't still be doing it. So it just.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about a little bit of old school marketing again on the next episode. Absolutely. I don't want to give too much away, but it included a little recent shopping spree by you.
Oh yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Good stuff.
So we'll have to hear more about that on the next episode. So make sure you tune in. The audio will be crystal clear because it'll just be us too.
That's right. That's right. No worry about AM radio quality. You know, sound like you're in a drum or anything like that, or answering the phone on a 1970s phone. So,
I felt like a drive time DJ there with the caller, you know, calling in from their car. But
kudos to him, man. That phone, and when he broke out that phone, I was like blown away. That's I hadn't seen one of those in ages. So
I know I'm jealous.
Absolutely. Well, to all of our listeners, you can find us. You especially want to catch the video segment of this, just for entertainment value. Over persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your platforms, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, Spotify, you name it. And like Sean said, we'll see you on the next episode where we're going to be talking about some lump of mail and, like Sean said, some shopping, bargain shopping.
Sounds good.
All right.
We'll see you then.
See ya.